Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And listeners, you may remember our End of War series last year, in which we asked if there can ever be a world without armed conflict. We asked the opinions of economists, veterans, politicians, diplomats. We never thought to ask fourth graders. But since 1978, John Hunter has been teaching elementary school-aged children to solve global problems with a game he invented for the classroom. He wrote a book now called World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements about playing this game with his students. John Hunter, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Glad to be here.
The game sounds incredibly complex, first of all. So imagine that I'm a fourth grader and it's my first day playing. What are you saying to me?
Well, I'm saying we have a relationship. You can feel safe and you can fail if you wish to. As a matter of fact, you probably will. This game is designed to fail massively. So when they first come in, they're overwhelmed with the complexity of the game.
What are the rules? How do you win?
Oh, that's great. There are two ways to win, actually two conditions. One is all 50 interlocking global problems have to be solved reasonably, and that's judged by our weather goddess, the random goddess of the game. And also every country's asset value has to be increased above its starting point. In other words, everybody has to win in order for the game to be won.
So there are different roles in the game, and you pick or you get assigned different roles, heads of state, all kinds of things?
Yeah, I choose the leadership. I offer the roles of prime ministers to certain students I think have a potential for leadership. They can decline. They can turn it down if they wish. And they, in turn, choose their cabinets of Secretary of State, Minister of Defense, and a chief financial officer. And I choose the heads of the international bodies, the UN, the World Bank, and, of course, the arms dealers as well.
You also created a character in this game called the Saboteur.
You know about the saboteur. Yeah, we have that side in our nature, it seems. And, you know, the child who's always in the office, always in the principal's office for getting in trouble. Well, I try to use that skill set. I try to take that skill set into the game and ask them to play the game with us to try and do what we're all trying to do, save the world. But at the same time, through misinformation, misdirection, ambiguities, and irrelevancies, to destroy the entire process. And it forces everyone to think more deeply, critically.
So you do actually pick a kid who tends to get into trouble to be the saboteur?
Yeah, we don't leave anybody out. You know? And that child usually is a very high-functioning child. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so creative in getting into trouble all the time.
And this character, which sounds kind of mystical, that you referred to, the weather god or goddess?
Well, yeah, that person usually is a proto-Supreme Court judge. It's usually a girl who's able to make incredibly precise, wise decisions based on a random chaotic situation evolving in time.
Well, school's out today, at least in New York City, so I'm asking teachers and parents now to call in. Has anybody ever played the World Peace game or something similar and want to reflect on this? 212-433-WNYC, or do you use games with your kids in the classroom to encourage critical thinking or political thinking? 212-433-9692. So what's an example of a typical crisis that you might give out to your students? Does one kid start to role play Kim Jong-un and threatening to blow up the world with nuclear weapons, or what do you do?
Well, we take templates from the real world, the real world situations and crises that I disguise. And, you know, we used to use real countries when I first started the game in the late 70s, but I found the children were getting stuck. The solutions they were coming up with were ones that they got from the news or from their parents. And, of course, we know the adult solutions weren't working so well. So I put fictional countries in, and that really liberated them to try unique creative solutions. A typical scenario might involve an endangered species that's microscopic, so it can't be airlifted out, as some kids have done before, right over a site where new fossil reserves have been discovered. And the country that's discovering them is in dire need of the resources and revenue that might come from that. And then another country nearby is dedicated to preserving the environment and endangered life forms, and it surrounds the territory and won't let the country that owns land drill there. So you've got a conundrum, and you've got other parties getting involved. There's no real right or correct answer. I don't know how to solve them myself. The kids have to evolve an answer every time in a different way.
This is much more participatory than what I did when I was in Cub Scouts, where they were role-playing the United Nations, and this was during the Cold War, and I was assigned to be Tito, who was the communist dictator of the old Yugoslavia. Yeah. And they were like, somebody's got to be Tito. But it never really went anywhere. You know, we just kind of heard a little bit about each country.
Yeah.
In your game, whenever someone decides to send out troops, they get in trouble. What are the consequences?
Well, they're natural consequences, and I don't preach them or try to teach them. The students experientially find out and discover what the effects of aggressive action or impulsive actions are. And so they learn through doing in a safe and bloodless way what works and what doesn't. And they always break my heart, Brian. They always do what I don't think as a teacher is the best way or the best answer. And were I to tell them what I thought was best, it would stop their thinking in its tracks. So they learn by doing and experiencing the right way through living it rather than being told about what somebody's idea of it is.
But, for example, if I understand it correctly, you make your students, if they're ordering troops into battle as part of this role play, write letters to parents of imaginary troops in battle.
That's right. We just wanted to bring a bit more realism, and still they're children. You have to do this appropriately. But we thought we'd ask them to write a short letter of condolence to the fictional troops, the fictional parents of the fictional troops that they might have lost in battle. And it's a kind of a sobering moment, and we've actually had a parent in the room who volunteered one day to read one of these letters out loud and burst into tears when she did, because, you know, we all understood the loss, even in a fiction, of what that means.
And does that create, and is it intended to create, a kind of revulsion to war if a 10-year-old has to write a letter to a fictitious parent informing them that their fictitious child has been killed in battle? That's a lot different than, do we need to make this geopolitical decision, you know, for meta purposes?
Right. And you know what? I think we just try to allow students to experience reality. They're quite aware of war and warfare. Quite a few of them have relatives involved in these kinds of conflicts. And so it's not as if they don't know and aren't aware. So we're trying to just simply broaden their awareness in a safe way that's more deeply thoughtful about the consequences of these kinds of severe and intense actions. And often they go to war against my wishes, and they go through it and come out the other side with a deeper understanding than they could have had I stopped them.
John Hunter, my guest on WNYC, who is the author of a book about his experiences working with fourth graders called World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements. And Scott in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Hey, John, I've always been a fan of what you've been doing.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
I used to work for something called the World Game Institute, based in Philadelphia in the 90s. And it was started by Buckminster Fuller. Fuller had something in the 70s called the World Peace Game, which was like a workshop that took place over a long weekend. He brought scientists from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
His objective was to prove that the world could work for 100% of humanity. And, you know, of course, it can. Scientifically, you can. But the just to tell you, I don't know if you've heard about the World Game. It's no longer in existence, but I travel all over the world facilitating this workshop for high schools, colleges, and even customized versions for corporations. And I developed a middle school version of it that I trained outreach staff at science centers, Carnegie Science Center, Natural History Museum, et cetera. But is there any connection between what you're doing, or had you heard of Fuller's World Game, just out of curiosity?
You know, I wish there were more of a connection. I was unaware of the World Game until years later, and I wish I had known about it sooner. His version, as I understand it, was fantastic. And I do know David McConville, who's the head of the Buckminster Fuller Foundation now. He and I are great friends, and we admire each other's work. But I would aspire to be like Bucky Fuller in his work, too. I've heard about what you're doing, and I really appreciate that. I think we all do appreciate the effort you're making.
And thank you for the call, Scott. And the title of your book is World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements. I gather that you've played the game with children of different ages, but mostly around the elementary school level. Do you think that a certain age is best for playing the World Peace Game?
Very astute question, Scott. Yeah, I played from, fourth grade up through young adults now. We had a game in Norway in 2011, and it was a different animal entirely to have adults play this game, an entirely different experience. So I'd see that children could play it, adults could play it, anybody with an open mind approach to problems and also with a relationship with the other players. It's not a game for strangers to play. The entire exercise as a teacher is based on a caring and trusting relationship in the classroom. So that's fundamental to whoever works with the game, I think.
One more call. Sean in Levittown. You're on WNYC. Hi, Sean.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Hey, Sean. What's your question?
I teach in middle school in Manhattan. I teach 8th grade at the Salk School of Science. And we played a game called Ninja Academy and Superhero Academy. But it's kind of an individual game where each student levels their character up based on certain challenges. They can increase their dexterity or they can take on a super challenge to level up. And they have a lot of fun and monitor their own work. I was just wondering if you've applied your model to a math class before or if you have any advice on how this could work in a math classroom.
Well, you know, actually, I started in 1978. I was sort of a teacher over all subjects, so I tended to integrate every subject into the game. So there's math there, there's science, there's language arts, there's arts. Everything sort of plays in together to give a more holistic, complex experience. I tended actually to over-complexify the game. I believe kids don't need to have things pre-chewed, that they can actually think more deeply and have a collective wisdom that's much broader than we give them credit for.
Confronted with ambiguity.
Absolutely, and that's life itself.
And I just want to play one clip before you go, a previous interview from our show, to get at the question of whether you think video games and action movies have an effect on the way that kids view war. I mean, sometimes in a game, war is more exciting than peace, and there seems to be more and more of this over time. We last year talked to Clive Thompson about the effect of video games on kids and how they think about war, and he said this.
Over time, they've definitely developed more disturbing elements. I mean, there was a controversial scene in a game a couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago, where you had to participate in being undercover in essentially a terrorist attack on a Russian airport, and you watched as innocent people were just gunned down. And a lot of people found that a really upsetting and thought-provoking episode to go through. So you do see these moments inside the games. They're not devoid of reflection on war, but they're not omnipresent.
Author Clive Thompson, who writes frequently about video games as part of our End of War series, do you think the kinds of games that permeate the culture compete with the kind of games that make it more hard for you to succeed with the kind of game that you're developing?
Well, you know, we can't help but be influenced and affected, I think, by all of this kind of thinking and intent. I believe what the World Peace Game tries to do is simply allow the reality to be there and children interact with it. But what I'm finding and have found over three decades, the children started out back then at the tail end of the Cold War with much more militaristic intent. And over time, they become much more thoughtful, less inclined to war, which is surprising to me in general, much more thoughtful before engaging in those kinds of activities, particularly after 9/11. The entire tenor of my classrooms in the last, 10 years or 9 years or so has changed that way. So I'm not so sure we're all headed that way. I've seen a lot of great teachers doing a lot of great work in games everywhere. So my perspective is very optimistic, actually.
So last question, and it's the ultimate question from our End of War series. And for you, now that you've worked with fourth graders on the World Peace Game all these years, do you think that humanity can ever abolish war?
You know, I'm no expert. I don't know. But what I think can be is that we can help children to find their own true selves, their own true nature, and find that and to express that default they seem to have, which is compassion and caring about others and decreasing suffering overall, and equipped with that kind of critical thinking and creative thinking, those tools, we've got a good chance of things working out much better than they have.
John Hunter's book is called World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements. It's an inspiration. Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, corruption indictments in the race for mayor. The U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York is holding a news conference about it right now. We will play excerpts from that news conference and explain who's being indicted for what in connection with the New York City mayoral race. Stay with us.